The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
7 minutes, it is past 6 o'clock. This Friday, the 10th of December. My name is Africa Malana, standing in for Bruce Whitfield. And The Money Show is brought to you by APSA CIB, bringing you consumer trends in the APSA Insights, the Black Friday edition, the bravery to imagine, that's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Coming up on the show today, both Standard Bank and Lightstone confirming the data breach on LookSee platform. We'll be speaking to the Managing Director of Advanced Intelligence, that's Stephen Ambrose, and then a global trade report on supply and chain disruption coming out today, reflecting on the fact that the supply chain disruptions will remain high until at least the second half of 2022 on the back of renewed COVID-19 outbreaks globally, China's continued zero COVID policy, and the demand and logistic volatility during the Chinese New Year. We'll be speaking to an economist for Asia Pacific at Euler Hermes, that's Francois Huang. We'll have a market commentary with Tato Mashiko, the portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, this evening. And then Rachel Smith is a young lady who is the managing director and founder of Smith's Gin. She goes three wonderful infused gins that she has on offer. And of course, her unique selling point is the fact that for every bottle of gin that you buy, a portion of that money goes towards training of young and deserving South Africans in the hospitality and tourism sector. It is a Friday, which means it's going to be the Swix edition of the Brutal Biz Quiz. I was playing with John Pullman a moment ago, saying that I'm nice, so it's not going to be as brutal as Bruce Whitfield only usually has it. So do tune in. There's some lovely questions for you. And of course, you can claim the bragging rights for the weekend. And then after the news at 7 o'clock, we'll bring you the best bits of the week from The Money Show.
702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DSTV channel 856.
Well, Standard Bank and Lightstone are saying that they've been the victim of a data breach that resulted in the personal information of some property owners being accessed without permission via the lender's LookSee platform, which is an online property purchasing guide. Joining me on the line now is the Managing Director of Advanced Intelligence, Stephen Ambrose. Stephen, how did this happen? Good evening.
Good evening. Well, unfortunately, asking how it happens doesn't really help anyone anymore. There's not much you can do about these type of consistent data breaches. Simply put, there are organizations around the world, around the country, that make it their business to send out what they call bots, basically. And what they do is they troll the internet looking for breaches or database access, depending on the types of databases. And then they collect this data and they use it wherever it may be used. It lands up in the dark web, it lands up in places that then can be used for other things. And that's the danger of the whole data breach. So this essentially was probably a weakness in their database somewhere, in their internet security, and certain hackers, it could be targeted. It's possible that certain people were looking for certain information, but it's more likely that it's just a general data breach within the context of either a poorly secured or poorly updated database platform that's accessible via the web. And that's pretty much what happened.
We know that Standard Bank suffered a systems outage yesterday that saw clients unable to access their digital channels for approximately 5 hours. Reports indicating that clients in 9 African countries had trouble accessing the bank's mobile banking app, while South African customers were also unable to log on to their internet banking, according to those reports. Were the two linked at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. This was a separate database that had taken data from Standard Bank's databases and was stored in a separate place for a completely different reason. So I would imagine, and I would be pretty comfortable saying that the core security and the core controls over the data that resides within Standard Bank's core systems is totally secure, or as secure as you possibly can make it these days. And it was not affected at all. This was external data with limited information that was on a separate database that was used for a completely different reason in the property industry. And the key thing to remember here, this data in and of itself is not particularly damaging. It gives details of properties. It gives details of people with these properties. And on its own, probably won't lead to any direct losses to the people that were compromised. The problem today is that data breaches are very sophisticated, and the whole phishing and the whole use of this data down the road is very sophisticated. So you get a phone call from someone, they know where you live, they know your bond number, they know so much about you because they've built up a profile, and they use that information to trick you into giving details over the phone or via email or whatever. So there's no longer a simple sort of direct causality between a breach and some form of loss. Obviously, I think Standard Bank and the people involved have reported this to the regulator, so everyone's aware. They have to, by law, inform everybody whose data has been compromised. And I just think that generally people have to be very, very careful whenever they deal with people who seem to know too much about them, even if those people purport to be the bank or some provider that they know. But it's really hard when you get a phone call from someone and they know everything about you. How can it not be the bank if they know so much? And this is the danger of this type of data floating around on the web. So heightened security is definitely important across companies, across organizations that deal with sensitive data. But we live in a world where the data thieves, those that go out looking for data, are as sophisticated, if not more so, than those that protect the data for organizations that want to keep it safe. So it's an interesting game, and it has some real-world consequences down the road.
It truly does. Both Standard Bank and Lightstone issuing a statement urging property owners to remain vigilant by reviewing their bank statements and reporting any suspicious transactions. They also stated that they've taken the appropriate containment and risk mitigation measures and had reported the matter to the relevant authorities, as you alluded to. What would be some of those appropriate containment and risk mitigation measures?
That sounds very much like corporate boilerplate. But essentially, they've probably taken the database offline. They've probably reviewed all the security surrounding the database, and they've done everything that they can to make sure if they found out exactly how the breaches occurred. As I said, it's generally due to some sort of smart hacker getting into the database through a flaw, through a phishing attack, through some sort of entry that was not authorized. And it can be simply that it's a known flaw or something that was not patched or a simple breach that someone gave their password to somebody over the internet somehow. So it's very complicated. It's not a simple, like in the movies when you go online and you type away and people hack into these things. It's not that simple. It's become quite a sophisticated matter. And a lot of the protective steps you can take are highly sophisticated and often need to be multi-layered. So you can no longer just have one little firewall or one little antivirus that protect you. There's probably got to be a couple of layers of different types of protective steps you can make. And in the case of a breach or an attempted breach, because often it doesn't happen overnight, they try a few times to get into your databases, you need some sort of early warning system saying someone is consistently trying to access this database online. Those platforms exist. Some companies have them, some don't. I do know for a fact that Standard Bank and most of the big banks in South Africa do have these type of platforms. And they're very, very clever at actually predicting the potential of a breach rather than simply reporting the actual instance of a breach happening. So in many cases, as I say, the data that has been taken now and the reports that they've made are simply to make sure that they do tell people and the public are informed that there's a problem. And that problem may affect them, and they should take sort of all the steps. If anyone contacts them around their property or wants any information about anything, they're just very, very aware online that if anyone sends you an email asking for sensitive information, anyone phones you asking for sensitive information, and even those people who know tons about you, just be a little bit circumspect. Offer to phone them back on a known number, or ask them for a reference number and then phone the bank and check. That sort of stuff that a property owner or anybody can do. The banks will never ask you for information over the phone that could compromise your security. And that's something that people forget. But there is a ton of stuff going on, especially at this time of the year, especially around specials and offers and things. And this type of stolen information is where they build up their profile of people and companies and users. So data breaches are big business, and they are serious today.
They are indeed. Stephen Ambrose, thank you very much. MD of Advance Intelligence. The Standard Bank confirming that approximately 745,000 registered properties in South Africa are currently being investigated following that breach, and saying that they are assisting the authorities in their investigation and cannot release information at this time. Their current investigations show there was no internal involvement in that cyber crime that affected Standard Bank earlier.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
The Euler Hermes Global Trade Report has been published, and in it, it says South Africa is likely to see a rise in exports in the coming years, but the global supply chain disruptions could remain high until at least the second half of 2022. Joining me on the line from Paris in France is an economist for Asia Pacific at Euler Hermes. That's Francois Huang. Francois, very good morning and welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I should have said good evening. The global supply chain disruptions will remain high until the second half of 2022. That's on the back of renewed COVID-19 outbreaks that we're reporting on, obviously. You're also concerned about China's continued zero COVID policy and the demand and logistic volatility during the Chinese New Year.
Yeah, indeed. So when we see global supply chain disruptions, that may be kind of a pure expression, but several factors are at play here. We have an imbalance between global demand and global supply. Basically, manufacturing, production, and exports are not able to fully respond to the strong rebound and the solid level of global demand that we've been experiencing since the second half of last year. And we also have other factors such as delays in shipping, port congestion that are also contributing to these global society disruptions. So when we say that China's continued zero COVID policy and some volatility during Chinese New Year could continue to keep global supply chain disruptions high, what we point to there is mostly that we could continue to see some congestion or some volatility in terms of the fluidity of maritime shipping. That's for the short term. And also, we will continue to see demand at high levels because in advanced economies, there's so much excess savings that was accumulated during the crisis, and there was still some state support. And on the other side, production is not catching up just quite yet. The good news is that companies' inventory levels are now at more normal levels, but the production capacities are not increasing everywhere. So we will continue to see some imbalance between demand and supply that could lead to further congestion or bottlenecks in supply chains. But later on next year, and especially towards the end of the year, in the second half of 2022, we think that an easing of these tensions should become more visible.
Despite the political challenges between China and the U.S., when it comes to inputs from China, it seems that Europe is on the weak side of the tug of war against the U.S.
Yeah, so maybe just to touch a word on what you just said in your question, we did have trade tensions between the U.S. and China even before COVID. And in the current context of these supply chain disruptions and shortages of goods and shortages of imports, in our central scenario, we don't think that we will see much further escalation of these tensions between the U.S. and China in the short term. But indeed, as you say in the report, we point out that Europe may be more fragile when in the race to access inputs coming from China, and that's for mainly two reasons. So I mentioned we need to see manufacturers increasing production capacity in order to be able to respond to the solid demand that we continue to see next year. And what we're seeing is that in the U.S., companies are indeed increasing capex, and that should translate into higher production capacities and higher supply in the course of next year and going into 2023. But we're not seeing that in Europe yet. So we might continue to see more of this imbalance between demand and supply in Europe. And the second reason why we think Europe may be more fragile in terms of shocks on global supply chains is because also in the U.S. there is investment plans in port infrastructure. And Europe, we don't see such plans yet. And having more, of course, port capacity will also help to lead to fewer port conditions and easier conditions for maritime shipping. So it's for these reasons that we think that Europe may be more fragile compared to the U.S. when we look at inputs coming from China, imports coming from China, and supply chain disruptions.
It's an important report, Francois Huang. Thank you very much for your time. One of the co-authors, of course, of the Global Trade Report, which was released earlier today by Euler Hermes.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Reflecting on the markets with us this evening is Thato Mashego, who is a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Thato, good evening to you. We start with the news out of the U.S. that saw consumer prices posting the biggest annual gain in more than 39 years.
Good evening, Africa. Yes, the November print for U.S. CPI came in at 6.8% year-on-year. The last time inflation in the U.S. was this high, Ronald Reagan was president and Paul Volcker was the Fed chair. It was before my time on this planet, I must say. So this level of inflation from the largest economy in the world has not been seen for a very, very long time. But what this means, obviously, is that there is significant pressure now on Chairman Powell in terms of both tapering and rate hikes. So what we can expect from the next Fed meeting is an update on the dot plot and probably guidance on improving or increasing the rate of tapering. So we know that they've already reduced $15 billion per month from their tapering program, and we can expect further reductions in that. And possible rate hikes being moved further forward, which is negative for EM assets and positive for the dollar. But all of this comes in the backdrop of further economic packages from the U.S., in particular the social safety net bill or the soft infrastructure bill, which would be an additional $1.75 trillion, which could be added and put further pressure on inflation, at least in the short term. So a very large number, an increase from last month, and we may even see next month a further month-on-month increase in inflation. And this is coming, obviously, close to the December period, and with all the concerns around Omicron hurting consumer demand, and retailers may suffer from that seasonal drop. Not very positive news, although the market did take it in its stride. People were expecting something even worse, perhaps a 7% print, but we didn't get that, luckily.
No, indeed. RMH publishing their results today. How did they look?
Yes, well, RMH did come out with their half-year results to the end of September this year. And we've seen quite a few unbundlings from RMH. This has been a strategy of theirs over time. As investments mature, they do unbundle them into separate listings and return capital to shareholders. So very strong capital stewardship being shown by RMH. This began, obviously, 10 years ago when they created the RMI structure and put in shares and insurance in the mine Discovery. And they are now planning to Discovery and MMI stakes, which should happen quite soon. Last year, of course, we saw the unbundling of the first Rand stake. So now RMH is largely a property company, with RMH Properties being the largest remaining asset in the business. The NAV of the business over the period climbed up 7% year on year when you exclude the cash which they paid out in their special dividend. And they also disclosed that they received an offer from Atterbury Group for some of their property assets, which they did turn down, the feeling being that future value of those assets would be higher than the offer which they received. So at the moment, looking positive for RMH as the property sector continues to recover slowly from the hard lockdowns of COVID, we should see further NAV pickups in that book, and obviously shareholders looking for the further unbundling of the Discovery and Momentum stakes.
We received an investment update from African Rainbow.
Yes, we did. So African Rainbow Investments did provide somewhat of an update on their portfolio at the moment. A few interesting moves we see there. With Rain, they disclose that they now have more 5G products, which they're selling, than 4G products in the country. So they did begin their 5G rollout around 2 years ago, and they now have over 5 million households connected to their 5G network, and they're now expanding not just in the urban areas, but are now moving to peri-urban and non-urban areas as well. On the Afrimat side, they reduced some of their shareholding, so they now own 10% of that business, and that reduction did net them a realization of around 500 million rand, which they can redeploy elsewhere in their portfolio. On the Time side, they have successfully concluded a Series D fund, which they announced about a week ago. And that was led by global investors, Tencent, as well as CDC Group from the UK, who are quite active in Africa. They anticipate that Time Bank will break even in 2022, and in South Africa, it has 4 million customers. They're looking to expand globally as well. They also announced a partnership with Fashini Group, which will see 600 Time kiosks being rolled out in various Fashini stores. So an interesting update on the underlying assets within the ARC stable at the moment.
And there we'll hold it. Thank you very much, Tato. Have yourself a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Tato Mashego is the portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, bringing you consumer trends in the Absa Insights Black Friday edition. The bravery to imagine. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
The Finance Minister, Enoch Godongwana, was speaking in Parliament today, calling for changes to the way that the price of fuel is calculated after the cost of petrol, of course, rose to a record this month. He's concerned about the increase in fuel costs to the extent that we may have to play a role, he said, to do whatever we can to support the reform of the fuel price. Data due out on the 15th of December is expected to show headline inflation accelerating to 5.5% in November from 5% in October. Driven by fuel and food costs, the price growth measure has been above 4.5% midpoint of the central bank's target range at which it prefers to anchor expectations since May. The energy minister, Gwede Mantashe, telling lawmakers that separating the fuel levy from prices would be helpful. He said, at this point in time, a big part of the price increases is the levy. The way of countering price increases is an urgent matter for review, and that is on the table, said the minister.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
And today we are reflecting on a wonderful story of passion. South African gin drinkers can now enjoy their favorite tipple while also doing their bit to educate and grow the hospitality sector. Joining me on the line, not on the line, but via Zoom rather, is Rachel Smith. She is the managing director and founder of Smith's Gin. Rachel, a very good evening and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm getting excited about our discussion, which is why I'm mixing up my words, I'm afraid. Mike Wills was on Cape Talk a few moments ago, and gin apparently is the most consumed beverage in South Africa. I imagine this doesn't surprise you, does it?
No, not at all. It is a category that is definitely showing continued growth over the past 3 years. And it's obviously one of the reasons I did get into it. And I've got other reasons as well, which I hope to share with you today.
How did you get into it?
In 2019, I left my corporate job and decided that I wanted to do something on my own. And basically, I brought together my network within the hospitality industry and developed this brand known as Smith's Gin, where there's a different gin for every type of gin drinker. So I've got a citrus, an elderflower, and a spice gin. And yeah, just really leveraged our talented people in South Africa and their palates to create these beautiful expressions of gin. And yeah, just kind of kept on going from there. And if I didn't know the answer, Google was always there to help me.
Because the assumption we make, Rachel, is that you must have a science postgraduate degree in something before you can start mixing gin. But I mean, it's not easy, but it's not as complicated as that either, is it?
No, it's not. And another thing that makes me quite different from everyone else is I've only got it's my BCom marketing. So no, when it comes to mixing, I'm no scientist, but I think what's quite nice about the brand is that it's definitely set apart from everyone else there that started in 2019 with clear bottles, clear labels, all about the craft and the I don't know, the clarity of the gin and what goes in it, what comes out. And I thought, well, let's bring some color into this category. Most of everything that I do is either fun, adventurous, and creative. And it puts the same kind of communication through the gins as you see them, as well as what we kind of get involved with activity-wise.
Because you need to do something to stand out from shelves and shelves and shelves of artisanal gin that is being made right here in South Africa. I mean, the variety and the spectrum of option that is available can be quite overwhelming sometimes.
No, it is enormous. And I think one of my key points and one of the reasons that encouraged me to continue is in the same year I started, I sent the gins off to be marked or kind of judged at the SA Craft Gin Awards. And the three of them, two of them, Elderflower and Spice, received double gold and Citrus won gold. And then I was like, well, look, I've got a winning formula here, a winning liquid. Everyone seems quite happy with the brand. It is something new and bright in the category. Let's jump in with both feet.
And that was not enough. You decided to add an even further incentive for the gin drinker to buy yours over and above everything else, because 5% of your annual profits from every bottle of Smith's South African dry craft gin sold will go towards upskilling deserving individuals in the hospitality industry.
100%. So what I learned over my years in the industry is if you're not in the right place at the right time, talent in South Africa is often lost because obviously the big companies aren't looking out in other areas than the main hubs where the cocktail culture is quite high. And I just saw an opportunity to have a long-term goal and a long-term kind of giving back to the industry that grew the person I am today and offer people an opportunity to apply for bursaries. Like you said, 5% of everything I sell in my business goes towards my bursaries, and move themselves up from back of bar to front of house manager, from front of house manager to restaurant owner, to restaurant chain owner, maybe even from a bottle store cashier to bottle store owner. That's the kind of drive and economic growth that I feel that more and more people need to maybe consider in what they do, just so that, yes, at the moment we're making gin sales to make money and do the turnover story, but there's also a big part to play in the longevity of an industry and making sure that the industry, especially the one that I love, continues for the years to come.
Now, your full range of bottles are available both at some of the more popular bottle stores as well as online platforms, including Norman Goodfellows. But people can go to smithsginza.co.za. That's smithsginza.co.za to learn more about the entire range and where they can buy it. You're introducing a one-of-a-kind flask that will be amazing as a Christmas gift.
Not exactly flasks. It's three little Christmas tree bottles They're 200 ml versions of our gins, so you get a little taste of each one, and I've packaged it into a very handy box, especially for those last minute Secret Santas, or I don't know what you get to this gin loving person, that it looks like it's wrapped, and then on the side I've added in a space to write a message. So you can basically go from freaking out that you don't have a present to a fully packaged, beautiful little gift for your gin loving friends, family, or even yourself.
I'm already ordering, Rachel. Thank you very much for your time this evening. And thank you very much, of course, for the incredible innovation that you're bringing to this wonderful, wonderful space in the beverage market. Rachel Smith is the founder of Smith's Gin. You can go to smithsginza.co.za for more details.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702
Time
app.
For the brutal biz quiz. The first question for you to answer on 021-446-0567 011-883-0702. Pitso Jingles Mosimane was linked with which South African football team formerly controlled by Patrice Motsepe before ditching it for the Egyptian giants Al Ahly? Pitso Mosimane was the coach of which South African, I almost gave an additional clue, but this question is easy enough. Which South African football team that was formerly controlled by Patrice Motsepe before Pitso decided to go and coach the Egyptian giants Al Ahly? If you know the answer and you'd like to participate in the brutal biz quiz today, give me a call now on 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Bringing you consumer trends in the Absa Insights Black Friday edition. The bravery to imagine. That's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
6 minutes it is to 7 o'clock, time for that brutal biz quiz. Temba in Bertrams in Joburg, you're the first to call in. Which South African football team did Pitso Mosimane coach before he left for Al Ahly in Egypt?
My manager's on town.
That's the correct answer. He was on the show, of course, earlier. Aibo, he was right. What, George, what's wrong with you? Are you not a Sundowns fan? He is a Pirates fan, you're right. He was on the show earlier this week. On Other People's Money, he shared some of the ups and downs of being a football manager, if you'll remember. And that interview, of course, makes it on this week's highlights. You can catch a snippet of it in the best bits that's coming up after the news. Your second question, Temba. JSE-listed Pioneer Foods recalled some of its snacks after it found low levels of which bacteria?
Oh, I've got no idea.
All right, Temba, I'm going to have to let you go, I'm afraid. Tabo in Reimsig, what was the bacteria, low levels of it, which was found by Pioneer Foods in some of its snacks that resulted in those products being recalled?
Sorry, Africa, I have no idea. Calling for pizza and sundowns.
We're calling for pizza and sundowns. Tabo, thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend. Let's try you, Gershwin, from Littleton Manor in Centurion. What is the low level of bacteria that was found in Pioneer Foods products that resulted in them having to recall it?
I'm just going to take a guess and say fungi.
No, fungi is not the answer. I don't think it is a form of fungus, actually. It is a bacteria. Malusi in Alberton, what answer are you offering?
Salmonella.
Salmonella is the correct answer indeed. Pioneer Foods are recalling specific batches of peanuts and raisins and cashew nuts, products sold under its Safari brand in South Africa, Botswana, as well as Namibia. According to a statement issued earlier this week, routine testing at Safari production site in KwaZulu-Natal identified a batch of products which tested positive for low levels of salmonella. The third question for this evening, Melusi, and if you get this right, you get the bragging rights for the weekend. Credit rating agency Fitch placed which Chinese property company in default? We had a conversation about this yesterday. It's a giant property.
I don't know, sorry.
Melissa, you don't know. Neo, in Tembisa, what is the name of the giant Chinese property that was placed in default by the credit rating agency Fitch?
Yeah, we can pass on that one.
Right. Mario, are you going to be the man who gives me the right answer? Good evening.
Good evening. I think it's M&T.
That is not the answer I'm looking for. I will give you a chance to call in quickly on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Credit rating agency Fitch placing which Chinese property company in default? Roberto in Edenvale, do you know which one?
Evergrande.
Evergrande is the Chinese property giant whose liabilities exceeded $300 billion, failing to meet its interest payments to international investors. That prompted Fitch, the agency that rates companies' financial risk, to declare it in default. The crisis has spooked investors who fear contagion across China's property and banking sectors. With that, Roberto, you have earned the honor of being the winner of the Brutal Biz Quiz for this week. Congratulations, good sir. And have yourself a wonderful weekend.